This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
There was talk over January that you might be moving somewhere else.
Yeah, I think, you know, the papers, the lights are chatting a load of shit, really.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast show. I'm David Michael, the editor of My Old Man Said. Do you like the blues?
No.
Not those blues. The music. I think we go for a bit of a bluesy vibe because it's more of the mood of this summer transfer window special. We normally start these recordings for the podcast around the midnight hour. And Dan and I, because there was so much to talk about, I mean, there's 9 players in, 14 players out over the window. We chatted long and hard into the early hours of the night, as well as discussing players coming in both directions. We focus on those who stood still, notably the curious cases of Micah Richards, Jordan Ayew and Gabby Abong-Lahore. And, you know, we assess the transfers in terms of the sections of the team and how the keeper position stands and the state of the defence, midfield and forwards. Apologies, we were hoping to bring you this podcast about a week earlier, just before, literally an hour before the podcast was due to record. I nipped out to the supermarket for 10 minutes and managed to get my phone stolen, so we had to postpone the recording there as I locked down all my security and remotely wiped my phone. But anyway, it is hard fitting this in. I mean, Dan's had a new addition to the family as well, so it's always a bit tricky to find the time to get everybody in sync to record. But we'll try our best and hopefully we'll come up with a better solution as we move forward. Before we get into the extended show, which is about twice the length of the normal ones so far, just a quick shout out to the new My Old Man Said patrons who joined us in the last month or so. Stuart Rucker, Stephen Edwards, Lee Smith, Michael Niblett, Stuart Sinton, Steve Vincent, Ben Bradburn, Chris Stretch, thanks for the upgrade, mate, and Dunk McConnell. Those guys, awesome. If you want to join them and become a My Old Man Said patron, go to myoldmansaid.com, look for patron in the menu bar, and all the details will be there to help support the podcast, because without those guys, no way would we be doing this. So let's get into the show. And joining me to discuss the ins and outs of the whole transfer window over the summer, Dan Rogers from the Villa Underground blog. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Very well. Hello there.
So, Villa have not been shy spending their parachute money. Aston Villa and Newcastle combined have spent more than the rest put together, which I think the gross spend is $215 million spent by Championship teams.
Well, we've played some serious money into this, and I mean, £60 million I think is about what we top out at. Considering about £25 million of that's on two strikers.
It's... Yeah, I mean, to put it in context, I mean, we spent more than Real Madrid. We'd spent more than I think half the Premier League teams the last time I saw the Premier League spend. So we're not messing around here. Obviously, Newcastle and Villa can't entertain life outside the Premier League for more than a season or two seasons tops. I mean, it's quite interesting in comparison to see Norwich. Didn't even spend half of what Newcastle and Villa spent. Have we overspent?
I think we've been in a position where we needed massive overhaul, and you know, you won't often find myself comparing us to Newcastle that often, but that you look at the two squads that came down, they needed huge overhaul, both of them, and I think that's reflected in the fact that both clubs have, regardless of our change in ownership, I think that we'd have had to have seen that huge change. Norwich, by contrast, I think have got a fairly robust Championship team with some, you know, one or two players who I think that we pick up ourselves given the choice. And they seem to be just, you know, they're sitting on, what, £100 million worth of parachute money. You probably think they can be picky, be selective. I can see they've picked up a, you know, a couple of midfielders and a striker. Whereas you compare them to Newcastle and Villa, I mean, you look at, you don't have to look at the ins and outs for both teams to realise that it's major issues there.
Yeah, because I mean, Norwich last season, you know, were a team. They were perhaps just missing two or three quality players that you need to, you know, keep yourself competitive in the Premier League. A bit like Burnley in that respect. You know, they played very well as a team when they popped up to the Premier League, but it's just they didn't have that cutting edge. In terms of being concerned about this spend. Obviously, I mean, and this applies to Newcastle as well, you know, Dr. Tony had the parachute money, and one of our listeners on Twitter, Scott Haynes, posed the question, does Dr. Tony's spending have any financial fair play impact? I think he was particularly worried if we were going to drop $20 million on Hernandez. So what's your kind of take on the financial fair play impact beyond the parachute money? I think that's pretty much, you know, that's why they can spend this money, surely.
It's a simple case of turnover. It's no more complicated than that. What we've got to contend with is that our drop in turnover from the Premier League and what's offset against the parachute money that we get. And the way that that's structured is quite interesting. And it's funny to hear off the back of the fan consultation, the two-year plan, because that's where the major wedge of that £87 million that we get, that's when it drops. You know, the third year is chicken feed, really, by comparison at £14 million, whereas the £73 million that we get over the 2 years, that has to be used as the catalyst to get us back. And I don't think it's any surprise that, you know, we're going into the market and we're trying to pick up people who will be the missing pieces to the jigsaw, really. And you can see through the recruitment that Di Matteo has been doing that they've been quite logical signings to improve us. We don't want to think 2 and 3 years down the line, because the major fallout of having made high value, possibly high wage signings that we have is if it doesn't come off, we've got a major problem. But if it does come off, well, that money, as you say, with add-ons and things, will look quite shrewd, I suppose.
Because I think the situation is it's go hard now or go home. I think beyond 2 years, there hasn't been that much planning. I think it's almost you'd be scared to contemplate what could happen to Villa if they didn't go up in these next 2 seasons. Mm-hmm. Going back to the financial fair play, the way, for example, it's almost been like a bit of a fire sale to get rid of some of the players. Like, for example, Yoris Akure, I don't think anybody would normally, in seasons past, would have let him go for nothing. But what Dr. Tony's said, obviously, both Akure and Traore have got sell-on clauses. So if they get sold, I think Traore leaving Middlesbrough is more likely. I mean, I can see Akure settling down at Copenhagen and playing a good few seasons there. So the upshot is get rid, just to get rid of the wages, you know, take a hit on the how many million they could have got for Akure. you know, they would have got been able to get something for Bennett, but at the end of the day, they just want his wages off as well. Same with Vera too, Sanchez, in terms of the kind of loan situation there. So financial fair play, when you've got the parachute payment, plus you're offloading players to get their wages off the accounts, it's not much of an issue. And they're not really spending that, you know, ridiculous amounts of money, because, of course, you know, there was also outgoings as well to at least balance the net spend to a satisfactory level.
It's worth pointing out as well that this is a team that's been chronically underspent on for 5 years. So, you know, I suppose Dr. Tony's playing a bit of catch-up in some respects, because he's inherited, Di Matteo's strictly inherited, I suppose, a team that crashed out the Premier League in spectacular fashion that many of us would agree we were very worried collectively, I think, as to what might happen to Villa if there wasn't significant radical overhaul of this squad.
But if you go back, and you only have to go back one season, I mean, there was considerable spend then. We're not talking a big net spend, because obviously we sold Benteke and Delph, so that kind of balanced the books up. And, you know, that's what was quite disappointing, was there wasn't much of a net spend. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I mean, it was almost the same amount spent last year. So, you know, what is the difference? There was positivity from the fan base because of this, you know, all these exotic sounding players that we'd bought in.
Yeah, I think going back to when we sold Benteke and Delph, I mean, this is something that I guess everyone's been over in their minds a thousand times. We sold them and we didn't replace with like for like. We replaced with, we all know how it panned out. And I think at this time around, we seem to be having a very condensed, I mean, it's been an incredibly busy transfer window where so many new faces have come through the door. Yet there is a big element of risk to this in some part, I guess. But it does feel like improvement. You know, you see the players, you know, you only have to look at the names that have gone out, your Richardsons, your Bennetts, very underwhelming names, or players who we've seen and they've let us down. Les Scott's another one. For all of Okore's early promise, he was either injury prone or was culpable for as many goals as any other Villa defender, to be honest. And I think that's the difference between this season and last season's close season. That I think that last season there was this false promise, I think, of what might have been, where really it was a plan of get youngsters in, develop them, sell them on for profit. This time round, it seems like get players in to improve Aston Villa and back to the Premier League. And that's a statement of footballing intent at the very least, you know, as opposed to surviving in the Premier League.
Been a pretty radical overhaul, which is exactly, you know, what we needed. Mm-hmm. But the initial speed of the business in terms of when the season kicked off, I think most Villa fans would be with me to say it was a bit of a concern that enough wasn't being done. But it seemed to have been staggered over the last few weeks, so there was mm-hmm. always one or two coming in. And when it came to deadline day, it was just a matter of putting the final piece in there. But apart from, let's say, Grealish, Amavi at left back, essentially the rest of the team's all new. They've obviously brought in the leaders for the spine, and this is a very, very big welcome strategy and the proven championship success. But it all looks good on paper, but obviously the reality of those players haven't played with each other. Will they gel, you know, will they work in unison as a team, and will it come together is another question. And I hope we don't rest on our laurels and think, well, you know, this guy, he scored 20 goals in the Championship last season. This guy got promoted. So, yeah, we're going to get promoted, no problem. I mean, there's no mugs in this league, apart from Rotherham. Oh, and the Blues, sorry. I need to say that. It's just it's in my contract.
I think that we have tried to have been as methodical as possible in... I do wonder whether we have been perhaps potentially, right, we need leaders. Get the players who've been promoted. Right, we need goals.
Get somebody who scored.
But in our position, I mean, there's anyone who sat at Villa Park or followed us around the country last season. We didn't create a fat lot. We didn't score very many goals, and we let a fat lot in as well. So
yeah. So before we let's get a bit more specific, and let's go through rather than a player of the time, we'll go through the areas like goalkeeper, mm-hmm. defense, midfield, attack, just so that we can, you know, address things a bit more specifically. Old friend Gallini. Still a problem, only because he's only just started, and you know he's hardly played any games in his senior career anyway. So Was you disappointed? I mean, it's something I've kind of banged the drum on in terms of getting a quality, let's say, more of a veteran keeper. I mean, even if they got somebody at the end of like we did with Brad Friedel and even Schmeichel back in the day, would it have been wise to just have that bit of security that if Project Gallini kind of goes tits up, at least we've got a first-rate keeper? And also somebody to give him a competition and somebody to learn off, because, you know, all respect to Mr. Bunn, I still think he's a, you know, second choice goalkeeper.
I think this is the problem that Gallini could face, because,
well, I think we'll all face it.
Well, we'll all be in front of it, and Michael Heffler's buttocks testify that he got in the way of it too. I think with Gallini we should have got, similarly to what you're saying, a veteran or a more experienced goalkeeper as backup. You know, keep him as the number one, give him that pedestal. But I think I said in our opening podcast and in some of the pieces I wrote pre-season that I worried that as such a young and inexperienced continental goalkeeper, he could become exposed very quickly. And if we're trying to reinvent ourselves as a solid back line and as a vibrant attacking team that can threaten teams we face, we don't want an obvious weakness in goal. You know, you mentioned veteran goalkeepers a la, you know, like when we took Friedel, or, you know, I was even thinking about just the same thing the other day. You know, would a Shea Given be such a bad option to have back in that type of, you know?
What is this, when you were taking crack cocaine?
Yeah, well, when I'd come around from my hallucination, but it's a long season, the Championship, and if the goal...
Yeah, I think essentially it's a security blanket, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And similarly with Bunn, that though Bunn has this quite charismatic approach and trying to build this rapport on social media with the fans, his displays last season showed us enough that he wasn't the number one.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't add anything on top of Gallini. You don't put him in if you just want a calm keeper at the back, because I don't think he has a presence. I remember when Villa went to Norwich in the quarterfinal of the League Cup under Lambert, and he was in goal then for Norwich, and we just walked straight through him. He was offered no resistance, really.
No.
Moving on to the defence, I mean, and obviously this interrelates to Gallini, because if a defence doesn't have confidence in the goalkeeper, then it makes the defence a little nervous, but also it works both ways. If you've got a solid defence, that helps a goalkeeper kind of build his own confidence. So are you happy with the defence? We consider Amavi, and he hasn't earned the right yet, but if we consider Amavi the starter, because he didn't really play the majority of last season, it is an all brand new back four, which obviously we needed. What's your reckoning so far? Because after pretty solid opening, apart from two freak goals in the first four games, they kind of fell apart in that second half against Bristol.
Yeah, I don't think though we fell apart at Bristol, I think that the second half syndrome has been an issue for us in the first five games generally. I know the Sheffield Wednesday game was slightly different. But, you know, if we're talking about improvement, I think what I've seen of Chester so far suggests that he looks a pretty shrewd acquisition, and you sort of scratch your head a little bit as to why West Brom wanted him to go, considering their squad limitations. Elphick looks like the type of leader and figurehead we exactly need across the back line. Dilat, I don't know really a lot about him other than we needed cover in that position and he seemed like the best available option. And I think if that's the best available option that we could get, that will do, really. And I think the other part of it is that Bakuna, we know Bakuna as well as anyone. We know Bakuna. And as much as we want him to do well, there's a horrendous mistake in him, and he's not a right back.
So moving on to the midfield, it's kind of pepped it up and freshened it up is what I would say. I think Jedinak faded drastically against Bristol, but if he can step up and become the leader of men that we anticipated, I mean, that's going to help the defence and, you know, all the issues that we've just spoken about.
Welcome to Jedinak's Jangle. I've just arrived at Villa Park in the heart of the concrete jungle. There's reports of a real live Bakuna. He's a beauty with two left feet. And there, a wild Westwood. Oh, look at him. He moves like a crabber. What a beauty. Come on, little fella. Side to side now. Oh, wow. Look at this, a real treat, a strange and elusive Gabby, a lazy, sloth-like creature. But yeah, you watch him move if I wave this wand at him, a real ripper. Oh, crikey, now a leech-like critter, bleeding the local resources dry. It can only be one thing, it's an Azogbia. Struth.
Tishbola, it's all about if he can stay off the medical table. Mm-hmm. I think that's half the battle.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the midfielder that actually gives us that extra dimension going forward, what's your first impressions of Albert Adomar? My first perception is that if you've got Grealish on the left, him on the right, suddenly this team looks a bit more balanced than it has done for a while, because I don't think Bakuna playing ahead of a right back in right midfield as a winger. I think he's a half-assed winger, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't drive and he doesn't attack and with any pace, and he doesn't cause problems for the fullback of the opposition. So do you see this as potentially one of the better signings?
Yeah, I think it's a clever one. The guy's got some assists in him. He's another player that we've signed where the opposition fans haven't been very dismissive of him going, really, that he's been one where they've been a bit surprised and a bit disappointed. I think a criticism of him has been that he's perhaps a bit inconsistent, but he's a winger. So, you know, that's you're not going to get 100% consistency with a winger.
I think Villa fans of a certain generation will know about Aston Villa wingers blowing hot and cold. I mean, you only have to look at Tony Daly, for example, capable of mesmerising brilliance one game and then couldn't cross it if his life depended on it other games.
Exactly, and Adomar might be like that, but he's also gone up in a Championship promotion team again. Has a few goals in him by the looks of it as well.
Yeah.
And he's got bags and bags of experience. He comes in, I think, is he 28 or something like that?
Yeah, I think he turns 29 at the end of the year.
You know, great age, in his prime, experienced, a bit of a character by all accounts. And I think he gives us something that we don't actually have. You know, he's not at all like Grealish, so he's a different proposition for defences completely to him. And again, without wanting to single out Bakuna for the second time in this podcast.
second time in 1 minute.
Exactly. But he's Bakuna the future of Aston Villa. He's not. There's no getting away from it.
I mean, the upshot is when I see the Villa midfield and I see Westwood and Bakuna as two of the four, you know you're not gonna have a good day.
Well, most of us are put on suicide watch when that happens, David, so we have to the signings of Yedin Aktishbola and Adomar has to improve matters. And
I mean, it's easy to talk about, the defence is crap, it needs improving, we're not scoring goals, we need to. But if you don't have a good midfield, none of it works.
Exactly. Well, how many times have we been overrun? And look at even this season, I think Bristol was an example. When we got took apart. But the Huddersfield...
Westwood, Bakuna.
Oh.
That's where I'm going with this.
It makes me exhale.
You're not going to hold out with those two. The term lightweight has been thrown around, but it's true. It's completely true.
It's absolutely true. And even the Huddersfield game where we were so dominant the first half, when we faded, we had no plan B. We had no option to, we didn't have a Yedin Ak to bring off the bench. And I did think that this is where I don't think Bristol City defeat will be a true reflection necessarily, because with Tishbola injured, again, we had nothing on the bench. It's only because we signed Yedin Ak. Actually, we had a functioning midfield, if you like. But when fatigue set in and when they got built a bit of a head of steam, we our options were, what, Gardner again? So I think we may need to see what happens as the season pans on.
I'm just going back to Adomar for a second. He's international buddies with Mr. Happy, Jordan Ayew. There always used to be this formula in football that if you were going to buy like a star player, and let's say he's Argentinian, it was always useful to get another Argentinian in there, even if it was like squad cannon fodder, to be a buddy. And there's a few examples. I think it happened with Suarez. I think when he was at Ajax, they bought somebody in to be his buddy.
Well, Man United did it with Raphael and the other fullback. You know, it's not uncommon that you get the good one and the rubbish one, film.
Yeah, but in this case, I think, you know, hopefully we've got, in terms of Ghanaians, we've got two good ones. But I think, it can't not help Jordan Ayew. Maybe that will kind of improve his game. And obviously he's somebody who he's played with a lot as well. So it's not somebody who's just going to come in out of the cold. You know, there's enough footage out there to suggest that they click well while playing for Ghana. So I think that's a positive link-up.
Probably positive in the sense that Ayew actually stayed. I think it would probably be 50-50 on most people whether he was going to hang around at Villa Park, really.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get on to that in a second. Let's just finally just finish on the forwards. Mr. Cormack.
Great signing, I think.
He's got a big buddy now next to him. Jonathan Codger, if the pronunciation.
Are you sure about that pronunciation?
If the pronunciation. Codpiece? I don't know.
I'm going to go with Codger because it sounds like.
We'll go for Codger. So McCormack and Codger, is that a front two or are they being rotated? Because obviously, where does Rudy Gested fit into the picture now? Dan, where does he fit in, Dan? Where does he fit in?
Where does he fit in? I don't know. Serving soup to the homeless? I don't know.
Hey, that's probably, in doing that, he's probably the only Aston Villa player that's actually contributed to the universe in the last season.
I think McCormack's a great signing. I think Kojak. He's scored goals last season. He doesn't seem to have scored many goals before last season.
Let's call him JK.
JK. So McCormack and GMAC and GMAC and JK up front. RMAC and JK.
Yeah, RMAC and JK.
RMAC and JK up front. They're going to sell shirts. They're going to score goals. They're going to fire us to the top three in the world. He scored 20 goals last season. I think if there was one worry, he doesn't appear to have scored many goals before then.
Yeah, he was a bit choppy and he went out on loan quite a few times but didn't actually seem to have any kind of, never given a chance to have any momentum maybe.
The thing is, he was knocking around France since, 2008? So we're talking, 8 years ago? He's played a bag of games, didn't score very many goals. Then he had a season where he scored 15 in about 30 games for a transfer to Bristol. I mean, they only paid $2 million for him last season. And he's become his valuation could reach $15 million if we get promoted. So what's the cost of promotion, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think the Bristol City chairman played a very savvy game at the start of the window. And I think this is when, you know, Villa were initially sniffing around because he was obviously on the list of strikers they were after. I mean, we don't know how high up he was, but for the chairman to come out and say he's not going anywhere for nothing below 10 million and he's only going to a Premier League club, it's like, I'll just put that out there, you know, so everybody knows where they stand. I mean, as you said, he's had one season, 20 goals, and what is he? And that's in the Championship. He's, you know, what is he really? He's a 6 million job man, 6, 7 million. But they've overspent. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of when Villa literally wrenched Darren Bent out of the hands of Sunderland, who didn't want to sell him at that time. But they massively overspent on him there.
Yeah, there are some similarities there, I suppose, that we desperately need goals. And if there's another, I don't want to be prophet to doing with this, but if there is one flaw in the signing of JK, is that he's going to disappear to the African Cup of Nations as well.
Yeah. We'll discuss that in a second. But when you consider his last season, I mean, his last season was pretty impressive. I had a look at the Bristol City YouTube site, if anybody else hasn't seen it yet, of essentially a compilation of his 20 goals. And, you know, his build and his kind of his game, it reminds me of Stan Collymore in some respects. He's, you know,
tall. Careful.
But no, you know, tall, has that strength, power, speed, and cuts, you know, silhouette of him would be pretty much similar, I would imagine. So yeah, if he can maintain what he did last season, I mean, it could be a special buy.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the same video reel, and yeah, that's dangerous. You know, we all saw the Traore video reel as well.
And the Tonev.
Well, Tonev will still come good. He'll still come good. as the race relations ambassador for FIFA or something like that. But going back to JK, I mean, having seen some of his goals, at the very least, he looks versatile as well.
Yeah.
I'm struggling to think of who like Maybe this is the point. He's very unlike anyone else that we've actually got. And we seem to be assembling a group of strikers who have quite different attributes, where this codger appears to be able to score goals that are quite scrappy, are quite creative, involve some power. You look at McCormack appears quite a tricky player who's quite happy to have a pot shot.
Yeah.
Gested's your tall man who, you know, if you're going route one or you can put a decent ball into the box, you can put it away. And AU, though I think he's... Does his own thing on his own terms.
In his own universe.
And he's probably very disappointed not to be in Marseille about now.
Most of these players, they've obviously been bought in with the immediate task in mind, which is promotion at all costs. And you've got a good, you know, 1 or 2 years, depending how quickly we get up, where they're almost as good as we could have got for that purpose. But in terms of, and, you know, maybe it's a bit premature to talk about this now, but do you think there's much future proving in there? Because a few of those players like Chester, Elfink, Dillette, we'll leave Albert Adoma off the list at the moment. But some of these players, yes, they were at Premier League teams, but they've dropped down because they were in the fringes of the teams after they got promoted. Is that a sign that we've actually got quality and we've spent well, or is it a little bit, let's not worry about the Premier League now, let's get up and then think about them later?
I absolutely think that is the case. I think that we're going to be hampered to a degree by only being able to purchase certain types and certain calibre and attract certain quality of player. That's an obvious barrier, if you like. And the other issue we've got is everybody who we approach to buy a player from knows that we are flush with cash.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge disparity between Premier League teams and the relegated Premier League teams, between the Championship and whoever else. To be honest, that disparity exists between all of those teams and continental Europe. You only have to look at the spends across the transfer window in places like Germany, Holland, France.
Yeah.
They're in the low millions compared to, I mean, the Premier League money is stupid, but the Championship money dwarfs a lot of these leagues. So it can be skewed at, you know, yes, we've overspent, you know, these fees are ridiculous, but we probably haven't got a choice. And
I think, I mean, to be fair, I think Villa had their legs lifted on a lot of the players that were brought in last season in the summer transfer window. Your Veratus, your Garners, your Amavis.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
All 2 or 3 million above what they should have really been bought in for, judging on their performances as well.
Well, that's the point. I think with some of the players we've brought in and for the values that they've come in, I mean, Jedinak's reported somewhere in the region of £2 or £3 million. Dillette's less than that. I think sub £2 million is what's been quoted.
Yeah.
These aren't, in modern football, that's actually pretty shrewd business.
Yeah.
You look at McCormack. If McCormack can throw 10, 15 assists and 10, 15 goals in, he's worth every penny.
Yeah.
Every penny of 10, 11, 12 million or whatever it
is. Because he's the perfect example of somebody bought for the task in hand. Because I don't think Villa as a entity really give a shit about him for the Premier League in terms of the fact that he has no, you know, previous in that league. I don't think that's a concern at all. It's more the here and now.
Well, we haven't seen very much of McCormack, but I was interested to see some of the reporting around him being, you know, completely overlooked by the Scottish setup in their squad.
Yeah.
That's fascinating to me because...
It is.
You know, no offence to any Scottish fans, but the calibre of their national team isn't great. And you would have thought he would have been, you know, a part of trying to improve that. But the criticism is that he can't actually be accommodated because no one really knows what his best position is. That was a bit of an eye-opener for me.
Like, for example, Sean Maloney, who you could consider a, you know, similar player in terms of somebody who pulls the strings up front and has a bit of extra dimension. He's, you know, he's managed to get in the squad in the last few years. But for McCormack not even to be, I mean, you know, Hutton's in there, for God's sake. But for McCormack not even to be, you know, one of the front runners is a bit of a concern, because the big question is why.
It's true, and it sort of sits alongside the other question: is why have no, like a Burnley or a Middlesbrough or even a, you know, Norwich when they got promoted last season? Why didn't any of them fancy McCormack in their teams as, you know, even the man off the bench as the extra striker to potentially keep them up? Why didn't they fancy him?
Yeah, because interestingly, like when the time that Fulham bought him, That was when there was about three. I mean, as we highlighted last in the last episode, I mean, we had McLeish recommending McCormack for Villa, and I think Sunderland were also interested. There was three Premier League teams sniffing around him, but he never, you know, Fulham. I mean, Fulham paid a lot of money for him, and obviously that must have been parachute payment to get him in to do exactly what we've got him in for. didn't quite work out for them.
Now it's time for Twitter with Tony.
August 26th, quotation from Mao. We must have faith in the masses. Truly, fans' viewpoints are even better than scouting reports. August 26th. We've agreed to let Joe move to Cardiff for free, but not subsidise his wages. Wish him a bright career there, as many SW fans expected. August 30th. The last day of transfer window. A lot more maybe will happen. Maybe nothing happen at all. Whatever. August 31st. We're done this window. Nothing can be perfect as we tried to more. But we achieved our early plan. Great work by whole new team. Oh, what a tag man.
Can you sleep at night now?
Definitely. I think not having to worry about whether roots will grow from Lescott's legs or balls will sail over where Micah Richards should be stood in centre-half going, what's he doing over there?
Well, he's still in the setup.
I can't see him featuring, can you?
Well, I mean, the situation was on the deadline day, he was... I think he was sitting in a hotel at the Belfry waiting to go to West Ham, or waiting for a call back anyway. And Villa had actually gone to the trouble having a centre-back for cover, because, anybody knows you need four centre-backs when you're going into, you know, a season proper, especially the Championship with the amount of extra games. So there was a centre back, and I don't know. I think pretty sure it was a season loan, and there's been a couple of names thrown around on social media. But because the whole Richards thing fell through, the other guy wasn't needed. The loan wasn't needed, and Richards is that centre back cover.
He was the fall guy to some degree, then. So that's quite interesting. I wonder how that plays on a player's morale, and that sense of being out of the club and then actually finding yourself back at Bodymore. No criticism of Richards per se, but if he was made, he was going to be the, it's going to be off for all intents and purposes, then, it must be a strange sort of mental place to put yourself back in, because he's not really in a squad where he would be considered second or third choice in those positions either.
Yeah, and it's also, and his teammates know that, so it is a bit of a strange one. But I mean, in his defence, and, this comes from people at the club, doesn't seem that nobody's really ever had a problem with Richards in terms of his attitude. So, for example, if it was flipped and it was Lescott that was staying on and Richards had managed to get a move.
That's a very good point.
Then I think there would be more of an issue there, because you've got somebody who the fans, with a good reason, turned against. Richards, when you trace back, the only thing you can make him guilty of was what he did on the pitch. And, against Wickham, he was a positive force there. Chatting with fans and not shying away, going directly to them and, talking to them. And he was like, at that stage, there were poles apart, the supporters and the players. And he was the only one who actually crossed the bridge and, met them halfway. And in terms of doing his duty at the club as a captain and interviews and all that kind of stuff, he's never shied away from that. It just gives me the shivers when I see him play.
I think that's where the line should be drawn, really. That we've had a lot of players who you can say, well, he tries hard, or Hutton's another player like that. Different issues, but runs around a lot, he tries very hard. But when you actually look at the performance and the outcome and the what do they bring to Aston Villa's defence, maybe there is another role for Richards. I can't see it. I, personally. I'd love to think there was, but there's some serious rehabilitation to be done there. You know, his positional sense was terrible. Too many times, repeat myself from an earlier episode, really. Too many times you look back on a goal that we conceded, and he wasn't the only guilty party, but there were so many times we used to think, oh my word, what was he doing during that sequence, you know, that led to that goal?
But I think January, I think his future will be reappraised there. And I think his agent will be working over the next few months. But as I said, it could be worse. If it was the other way around with Lescott, then you've still got a toxic element.
Well, it's just great that he's gone. I mean, we're going to get to players who've gone out shortly. But I think the toxic element and someone who, for a Villa fan as well, he badly let us down.
Let's just look at the outs now. And I mean, at the end of, well, not even at the end of last season, in terms of social media, my favourite hashtag, which I, you know, put out there was all out. I didn't care who left. I wanted as many as possible out. And to be fair, they've done a pretty good job.
Oh, I don't know, like a Black Friday clearance event, hasn't it, really? It's been a real, you know, but I think that's, maybe that is the good comparison, because the people running in and grabbing them, grabbing these players, they really don't know what they're getting, do they? It's a load of crap. You know, whoever unwraps the box on Lescott's going to be, you know, it's going to ruin that blue sky and lovely hot Greek weather. And
I think it's a good move for him. I mean, in terms of Nzogbia lifestyle, it's why not get some time in the sunshine? It's, you know, it's a beautiful place, Athens.
Glasgow, Athens.
Yeah. So he's not, you know, he's not that stupid, put it that way.
He's clearly not.
But expected, Guzan going out kind of had to happen. Bennett.
And already dropping clangers at Middlesbrough. Excellent. Carry on.
Bennett, nothing to see here. That was expected. Yeah. Richardson and Nzogbia ran, you know, their contracts expired. Thank God.
Oh, who's in Nzogbia's new club?
Who?
Exactly, he hasn't got one because he's
shy. I was about to say, interestingly, Nzogbia hasn't been picked up by anybody. But no, even like Norwich were mentioned about, you know, after Sunderland obviously gave up the ghost on him.
I mean, honestly, if anyone with a... No one, surely, even a passing knowledge of football is going to give that man a contract. I mean, it's just a farce, isn't it? You know, have you seen how he dresses and his shoes? I mean, it's just, okay, it's ridiculous. Oh, no.
His hat's quite cool, though.
I think the fact that I even know the hat you're referring to tells you everything about the man. You know, this is, grief. Light hat, I need to move on. The therapy costs me too much for him alone.
Garner, well, that was a kind of a given because of the release clause. I still think Kieran Clark's one of our best pieces of business in the window. Getting rid of him for 5.1 million is quite a smart move, really.
Yeah, I think he was. It's one of those
considering how much. Considering how much we got, let's say, Elfink in for.
Yeah, we've improved in that position, and Clark's one of those where, you know, no one really disliked the bloke, but it wasn't make or break whether he stayed. It was probably a good deal all round, really. You know, we've planted a huge mine in the middle of their defence. Who can? I'm looking forward to him. I enjoyed him hacking down that in his first game and conceding a penalty. And
Agent Clark
was at work straight away. Yeah,
sticking with the.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Defence, Yoris Akore was perhaps one that maybe surprised a few people, because if you were counting your four centre-backs for next season, you'd have probably had him in there.
Yeah, Corey's a funny one, as I mentioned earlier on in this podcast. He came with all the promise, all the attributes where you thought this is going to be a great player, and he never developed. He never came.
No, he was the Champions League man who didn't want to sit on the bench at Chelsea or wherever. At the moment, he wanted to play, and you know, he wanted to. This is the kind of attitude that endeared him to fans. But unfortunately, he got injured. But I mean, as we've already discussed, the times he's kind of switched off in games and wasn't what was necessarily said on the can.
No, and there's something else about Okoro that I forgot when he left, when I was writing a piece for the site, was that this is a man who refused to play for Aston Villa as well. And when you see Dr. Tony talking about attitudes and things like that, he's absolutely right. We do not need that in and around the squad, and regardless of change.
Okoro said that was a misunderstanding.
Well, he would probably, and you know, that there's two sides to that story. I mean, at the end of the day, he didn't play for Villa again the remainder of that season. And
yeah.
The fact of the matter is he's in Copenhagen now, and in no other, you know, with the greatest respect to Copenhagen and the Danish Superliga, there was no other more prominent team in for him.
Yeah, I think that tells you. I mean, yes, he'll be playing Champions League football against Leicester if he gets picked. But so he's got back to the Champions League. But I mean, I didn't give a shit about the Champions League, to be honest. It's not a mark of anything. The fact that, you know, Sinclair's playing Champions League football, Okoro's playing Champions League football.
Well, it shows you what a farce it is, actually. Yeah. It's not Champions League football, is it? It's not.
It's just a big hype machine, essentially, to make money. A couple of ones, I think these two players are now on loan, which, I mean, essentially they're just, they're out. But Veretout and Sanchez are two guys that were meant to bring a bit of je ne sais quoi to the Villa midfield, last season. But both really big disappointments, I think, when you boil it down to brass tacks.
Take Veretout first. He never showed anything for months and months and months. He had a very brief purple patch under Remy Gard, and you know, we're talking a handful of games, and then completely disappeared. You struggle to see what Veretout's qualities were. You know, was he another Mathieu Bersin? You know, who will just disappear into France and eat cheese and wine in a very stereotypical French way with onions around his shoulders.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. It's the image that I've got of Jordan.
Let's character assassinate players with racial stereotypes on this show. Well, maybe we can do that next week instead.
Sanchez looked like a player surprised to be a professional footballer. He would do brilliant things like flick the ball around and then give it to the opposition so they could. It was a mistake.
He was a man who was born for Copa America.
Yeah.
Because any time that tournament's on, he's like one of the best players in the world, and he neutralizes Messi and you know, Neymar, no problem in his pocket. But
classic Villa, we buy the player and he looks like an absolute bag of spanners, doesn't he? And it's just another player who's gone, and people sort of, you know, you say, oh, Sanchez has signed for Fiorentina. People go, oh great, okay.
Yeah.
He's no loss, is he?
Looking at the list, I can't see any losses there.
Nope.
I mean, the only one that kind of, you know, niggles at you slightly is Adama Traore. Because in full flight, that was like something you pay your ticket to see. But
Context is important for Traore, isn't it? Because
we
saw him, what, nine times? And were there any starts in there? I don't think there were there? Maybe against Notts County in the cup where he got poleaxed. And the context is that in a season where we were dreadful, he was the only remotely unknown quantity, wasn't he? Where he would come on and he'd run. You know, you've mentioned before that he was quite headless, that Stafford Bodymore Heath couldn't quite believe how lacking in footballing, you know, true footballing ability he was when he came from.
But the Middlesbrough boss, Karanka, you know, seems to really rate him. And, you know, obviously Karanka was a youth team Spanish manager, I think it was the under-16s, and served his time under Mourinho at Madrid. So he knew him from back in the day when he was at Barcelona. And he seems to rate him, and he seems to, you know, I think he's quoted as saying, what you saw last season with Villa is just not the level that he's capable of. So, having a, you know, Spanish-speaking manager will obviously, you know, assist him in that respect, and somebody who's probably a bit more au fait with his game and, you know, where he's come from. But it kind of niggles, because if he suddenly explodes and turns into a world beater, we'll kind of kick ourselves. But we're not going to miss anything because we never really saw anything. I mean, there was a fantastic assist for Carlos Gil. But apart from that, I mean, he's just somebody who frustrated us because he was none of the managers seemed to be convinced by him when he wasn't injured.
But as I say, he was always injured. And I think he's the one player who you can say that there's potentially a quality footballer in there, or quality creative. Pace always terrorises defences as well. It's quite cliched, but it's true. You could see him going on and doing well. Equally, you could see him having another season like he did for us. You know, the English game is a very physical league. I think only time will tell with him, and we may kick ourselves, but equally, here and now, is Traore the player we need? Probably, I don't think he is. I think we need to be doing exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have no quite. Even if it's a straight swap between those two guys, and, you know we have a sell on. I think it is a straight swap essentially, but there's a sell on.
It's a good deal.
There's a sell on clause with Traore just to give ourselves a little bit of comfort just in case he does turn into the best player in the world. At least we know we're going to get some kickback there.
Is there any player that you could say you were sad to see leave Villa? Could you make a case for Garner, for example?
Garner falls into that same pot of players who we brought in last season, who were so disappointing that we slightly overpaid for them all. We were expecting them to be coming as young, hungry players to prove themselves. And Garner particularly, that he ran around a lot and he had some interesting early season form.
Because people will, you know, tell you, oh, but his stats, second to, you know,
Kante.
And I say, yeah, but I watched him with my own eyes.
Yeah. People need to remember this.
There's a big difference.
I mean, there's a huge difference between those two footballers. I mean, grief, the one was, you know, Kante, I'm not being funny, he won a Premier League title and was, you know, in the centre of the French midfield. Garner was in our side, and you talk about all the interceptions, all of the combative skills that were essential to that role that we needed while we were being battered and overrun week in, week out.
Yeah.
Where was he? Where was this? We'll beat it.
Going to the Telford game, the pre-season game, and, you know, you see him come out and you go, oh, okay, he might be sticking around. And he was awful that game. I mean, he was giving the ball away left, right and centre. His passing was pretty atrocious. And on that day, I thought, I don't want to see him again in a Villa shirt. So to get seven, you know, whatever the release clause, over 7 million was okay. I mean, that's another one who might be some shades of regret, but that's only based because people keep throwing around these statistics. And in the case of him, if you've got the second best defensive midfielder in the league, if that's what he is according to his stats, why are you only finishing on 17 points and leaking goals left, right and centre?
Absolutely.
I mean, obviously one man can't do everything, but...
But we were joking earlier about Bakuna and Westwood being in the centre of our midfield.
Yeah.
You know, Garner was the other option.
Yeah.
Football's such a physical game as well now that the centre, it's been apparent from the early championship games as well. You know, you put Westwood alongside, we used to see it when he was stood alongside Yaya Toure, and he'd be thinking, this is a fair competition. It's similar in the championship. The names might not be as big, but the principle's the same. You look at Jedinak, you know, they've got presence, they've got...
Well, I mean, actually, we got height all over the pitch apart from at centre-back. That seems to be the theme.
It's a strange one, that.
You know, Dom is like, is he 6'2"? So he's quite tall for a winger.
Yeah.
And then you've got your Gardner, Tish Bowlers, they're all well over 6 foot in midfield as well. And old, as we've already said before, Elfink and actually Richards, Elfink, Chester, all 5'11". Anyway, let's not dwell on the outs. I mean, we've already discussed the one that, if you were to write top of the list who should get out, I mean, some people would say Gabby, more of him in a minute, but Lescott was the potentially sticky one, getting on a bit. Is he 34? And LA Galaxy gave up their interest of him, you know, a long time ago after he was muted to go last season. And then this whole Rangers thing broke down. And he said, actually, that would have been quite a good move for him in Rangers because, you know, they were promoted back up and they're relighting the old firm rivalry. It would have been at least a kind of a competitive season for him.
But he's
And then it all went cold and you thought, oh, god damn.
It did feel like we were going to be stuck with him, didn't it? And Lescott, you'd have, on ability, you would have thought would have logically been behind Richards' centre half, and that's a strange thing to be thinking about.
Yeah, but I mean, to be fair to him, he probably put in a better shift overall than Richards in across the season.
Yeah, I don't even know, to be honest. I think it got.
I don't
to the
care
point
anymore.
Actually, no, I don't care, and that they were both equally rubbish. I'm delighted that he's gone on a package holiday to Greece.
I mean, moving on to the let's say the people that stayed that they were maybe borderline, which, you know, thankfully Lescott wasn't one of those. I mean, let's talk about AU. Because of his body language in both pre-season and the start of this season, and the way that Dr. Tony seemed to be frustrated by his attitude, pinpointing the tweet that he said after Grealish scored the opener against Bristol City, that you know, there was a possibility if somebody came in, and you know, these were rumours that were doing the rounds, if somebody put in a good offer and he was up for it, then we might have seen the last of him. So were you surprised to see him still at Villa?
Yes, I was. I wasn't sure in the early part of the season because I thought he was one of the guys without a release clause. But as time went on, as you say, that the body language, there was clearly something at play for after the Bristol goal where he was the only person not celebrating. You know, the fact it was picked up not just by on Twitter through the chairman, but in the media generally, that was picked up. He is such a strange character. You can't put your finger on it, really, can you? Because he's got bags of talent, but that's also shown in his game as well, isn't it? That he tries to do everything by himself. He's not the kid on the playground who won't pass.
I mean, I don't know how much we should read into him, you know, his non-celebration. Like, for example, Balotelli, you know, never used to celebrate.
Maybe there is nothing in it. I don't know. But he just hasn't seemed at ease in a Villa shirt, has he? And, you know, if those rumours are to be believed that Marseille were as good as trying to get him, but the deal didn't go through for whatever reason. He'll be another one potentially who, a bit like Richards in the sense who maybe people within the club will know that he probably wanted out.
Yeah.
Of course, it's speculation.
I think from a career point of view, though, from AU's perspective, I think he's made the right move staying with Villa in terms of toughing it out, because if he went to Marseille, it would have been seen as a little bit of a waving the white flag and not making it in the English league.
Yeah, it's a strange one because I think he has all of the potential to be a fantastic striker, but he's been so inconsistent. You know, for every fantastic strike like the one he scored against Newcastle the middle part of that season, you know, that you offset that against the two or three one-on-ones he's had this year where he should have put them away and he hasn't. And he's a really funny player because I do think he's, you know, we've spoken before about how last year he looked like quite a bright spark amongst very few. I actually think that he could be doing a lot more already. Hopefully he'll knuckle down now and particularly with some competition in the strikers, show his worth.
Yeah, because I don't think he's a guaranteed starter now, so that might change his attitude somewhat.
Yeah.
In fact, it's you know, you think, where's he going to play now?
We seem to quite like this four, don't we, as well? That's maybe with the addition of Codger and when Gusted's fit as well, it actually gives us for the first time an opportunity to change how we've been set up for the attack, because we've been quite rigid in what we've done, I think limited by personnel.
Yeah, we've seen that many times this season already, and you know, we're only five games in, that there has been no plan B or plan C.
So with, you know, at the very least, his staying gives us another option. You know, he's with us at least until January, you know.
Oh, but there is another option.
It provides me the chance to play for such a big club for the next 4 years. And as I always says, I've always wanted to be a one team. Do you know what I mean? I only wanted to play for one side, and that dream's come true, you know.
Ah.
What about Gabby? A lot of people, I still have him on a pedestal. To me, for a striker, I couldn't believe how shooting seemed to be his Achilles heel. The fact is, whatever he's done in the past, and let's face it, he was never that, you know, let's say 20 goal man.
No, he's never been prolific.
Never been prolific. I always thought at best he was somebody who gave you something that not many teams had, that kind of speed. But the upshot is he's done nothing the last few seasons, and his attitude has tended to suck. And here we are, you know, the situation where he was offered a loan at Reading. And as we heard in the clip just then, he makes out he just wants to be this one club player. But, you know, he's already had loans at Sheffield Wednesday and Watford. So why not go to Reading? And, you know, instead, on deadline day, while Micah Richards was on the phone in a hotel waiting, trying to broker that kind of last minute deal, he was on holiday, you know, happily with his family with no intent to get out of the club.
Well, that's the point. He's got no reason to move anyway. You know, this is a guy who is incredibly wealthy. To be fair to him, he's given us great singular experiences as Villa fans. That's something I'll underline what I'm about to say with that. The things he's done against the Blues, against the Albion, and you know, and other great games he's played. But the context is against so many poor games, so many anonymous games, and what we're now into is actually a long, barren period of him not giving a flying toss about Aston Villa.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything when he's had the chances over the last year. And you just look at him and he wasn't, you could tell he wasn't fit.
He was grossly out of shape.
And he's making this big deal of putting up photos sitting on an exercise bike. I mean, come on, you know.
It's a farce. You know, it's a guy who was messing around in hotel rooms on the night we were relegated. You know, everyone's entitled to a personal life and to do what they want in their own time. But he hasn't even, I think, I'm through with Gabby, and I think a lot of people are through with him, and I won't allow myself to be revisionist and say, do you know what, I'm going to focus in on those very few good experiences he's given us. And actually, he was rewarded with a four-year contract off the back of us playing, what, four or five decent games at the beginning of the nightmare Lambert season?
That contract, I don't think it was a manager decision. That was came from above. It wasn't Lambert saying, oh, we must keep Gabby. I think that was more of a Fox stroke learner thinking that he was the heart and soul of the club, that this was one for the fans to keep him. And he hasn't done anything since. It was almost like...
He hasn't earned that contract at all. And I could talk about my frustrations with Gabby because he's one of those... When he burst through into the Villa team, he had all of the attributes to be a top quality footballer. Not necessarily an out striker, but I think a top quality
footballer. Well, you know, he even scraped into the England team.
He did, and I'm sure there's countless examples across many football clubs of players like him. He probably should have been moved on years and years ago from Villa.
Yeah.
Some people feel he might be worth keeping in the squad. He's not. He's in the past for us.
It's over. But how does the story end? Because he's got two more years on his contract. Essentially, Dr. Tony's said, prove yourself. Be a man, prove yourself. And that would require him getting his hands dirty and going on a loan spell in the Championship. But I think he thinks he's like a Premier League player. And I think he thinks he is and what he actually is nowadays is completely two different things.
You've hit the nail on the head, really. The fact that Reading had clearly approached us for Gabby and were willing to make the deal, that tells you that no one above Reading was interested. And again, with great respect to the greatest respect to Reading.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I wonder whether the same rules that for Joe Bennett being declined a move on account of wages applies to Gabby. I imagine that they don't, actually.
Yeah.
I imagine that caught him a bit off guard because I would have thought that they clearly set that deal up to get him out of Bodymore Heath. And
yeah. No, it's an interesting one, actually, because, yeah, that was the completely opposite to the Bennett shenanigans.
That's what struck me. And that, you know, I speculate that why do they want to get Gabby so far away from this rejuvenated and changed first team? What, I don't even think it's necessarily about, you know, we've clearly got no intention of picking him. You know, we were willing to give him away by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
But we also want him as far away from our first team as possible. And that's telling.
Yeah, I can't see any way back because A, he's obviously not going to feature this season. And B, if we get promoted, he's not good enough for the Premier League anymore. So it's adios.
It makes no sense. I don't know why he wouldn't want to go and play first team football.
Can't see him going abroad because I think, A, he's got about 300 kids, and B, I don't think his character's cut out for making it abroad.
What you actually mean is you're not sure he can learn a second language, I think, is what you...
Well, maybe something along those lines, you know. In terms of improving the keeper, defence, midfield, forwards, the actual signings we've made in the context of the Championship, the task ahead, let's not think about how they're going to fare beyond that. Mm-hmm. What would you rate the purchase of Gallini
6/7 at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say 6.5. I'm kind of, in terms of, let's not just talk about Gallini here. We're talking about the goalkeeper situation in terms of what came in. Center. And I think where that mark drops down is the fact that we didn't, as we discussed, didn't bring in a, let's call him a veteran or a more experienced, let's say an upgrade on Bunn. I mean, people have talked about Jed Steer and how he had a successful season in the Championship, and he seems to be nowhere in sight.
Steer doesn't appear to be getting anywhere at all. That's the other baffling thing, that you'd have thought that in the absence of him as well, that we would be recruiting someone. So, yeah, jury's going to be out, firmly out on Gallini, but the lack of a second competent goalkeeper could come back to haunt us before January.
Because, I mean, he's been out at Huddersfield Town the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and Yeovil as well, I think.
Yeah, before that. But I'm surprised that Huddersfield didn't, you know, put in a bid and get him in if he was that kind of well thought of. And why would you get Gallini in if you've got a goalkeeper who's had that experience in the Championship and is actually only a couple of years older than Gallini? So Villa obviously don't fancy Steer. So anyway, six, let's move on. The defence, which if we consider that Amavi hardly played last season, let's say he's number one above Sissoko, pretty much it's a new defensive back four. Those three that came in, Chester, Elphick and Dilat, do you think they're, what would you give them out of 10?
I'm going to give them, I'll probably give them 7.5. I think that they're good solid improvements on what we've got.
I think in the context of the league we're in, I'll give them an 8.
That's generous.
Well, I thought you were the big Chester fan.
And I'm taking an average. Dilat.
Oh yeah, his 2 out of 10 kind of brings everything down. The midfield, which is kind of a weird one to give a score out of 10, because it's kind of all types of ingredients there that we've bought in.
That would probably be my 8, I suppose. That
right.
I think that what we've done quite well, from my point of view anyway, is we've looked at the obvious holes in the midfield and we've gone out and got, judging at some of the movements in the transfer market, you look what other people have bought. I think we've gone out and bought the best that was available and the things that we needed.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I think in terms of practicality, Jedinak, great buy. I think also that applies, although hopefully it'll give us a bit of dimension as well, Adoma. And then at Tish Bowler, as I said earlier on, if he stays fit, he's kind of a neat player. And he's obviously a player, he's still very young, but there's a lot of potential there. And once he finds his feet, him and Jedinak together could be the start of something. Definitely a lot stronger than we've had.
Absolutely, I agree with that.
So I'll give that an 8 as well. Forwards, McCormack, Codger.
So Armack and JK.
Oh yeah, Armack and JK.
Well, use the linger.
Sorry.
Solid. I think this is a really, really solid set of purchases. I'm going to stick my neck on the line and say 9.
So if I said McCormack and Hernandez, would that be any different?
I don't know. I didn't get the excitement about Hernandez.
He's not that good, I don't think.
No, I'm not. And if it's true that he asked for £100,000 a week.
Christ. Yeah, I mean, he's just lucky that he's Uruguayan and there's not 2 Suarez's, I think.
Yes.
Or 3. But then again, he's not the first team man for Uruguay. He's, flitters in and out of that, of the first 11. I mean, let's break it down here. Hull got him towards the end of their season in the Premier League. Then they were trying to offload him, but nobody was interested in. And he was trying to get out because obviously he doesn't want to spend the season in the Championship.
Clearly wages.
Hardly any interest. I was reading a local Hull paper about, when the Villa interest was kicking around. And yeah, it's all about the wages, obviously. But nobody in the Premier League was interested. I mean, they're the only people who could match what he was getting at Hull. And that was a panic buy. Initially by Hull.
Yeah.
Because Hull, all due respect, will not get a world-class striker.
No.
Because if such a thing exists, it's going to one of the top 10 teams. And
well, I think the point is as well that those top 10 teams will pay top dollar for anyone. And they're not, well, the fact that they haven't and they aren't for him.
And I could never see that buy coming off because essentially he's on pretty decent wages at Hull and Villa aren't going to match them because they're, and a principle, Villa wouldn't take the risk, wouldn't take the punt on them because he's not somebody who's, I mean, I prefer JK to him. Just yeah, on, prefer, you know, if you just watch the tape of them or the YouTube video, that's tape is like an old term, which sounds a bit better, like you're a professional coach or something.
I'm familiar with that concept.
I think it's more American. But, you know, just from that Bristol City compilation, those 20 goals, he looks more complete and more suited to the task than Hernandez, who may be a bit blowing hot and cold and asking himself still, what am I doing in this country? And what am I doing back in the championship? And why hasn't anybody good bought me yet?
I mean, we've definitely took a risk, I think, on
JK, I think, I mean, somebody who was 2 million last season, 11 million. I don't know, it kind of bugs me when people always call him by the amounts, including add-ons, because 15 million, there's a reason why it's 15 million, and that's because we'll have, that was a clincher for the deal, because we'll have Premier League money just to say, oh, yeah, here you go, shut up, here's that 4 million. But, you know, 11 million, as I said earlier, I think he's about a 6 or 7 kind of jobby.
Well, I think it's interesting because we paid something like that for Guested last season, didn't we, from Blackburn, and I think the fact that we've dropped down and we've got a ton of money and everyone knows we need to get out of the division that, you know, we've had to pay the premium, haven't we?
Absolutely. So, what did you give those guys? 9. I'd go 8, 8.5. But then again, how can you get much better? So, yes, Villa did overspend, but as I said, it's all in or nothing. So, your personal pick of the transfer window of the summer of 2016, Dan, is...
Tommy Elphick, proper captain, leader, certifiably insane, I think, which is definitely captain material for me. I like everything about him. I think that we haven't had
have
anyone who you think... he's with me now.
I was going to say, you got a big opinion on somebody you haven't met. I like everything about him. Oh, yeah.
I don't think I want to meet him. The guy's crazy. But he's that crazy. I don't know. I like him. He's got that sort of.
He's determined. He's for the cause, isn't he?
Yeah, and you can tell he's one of those people. I imagine really enjoys playing football as well, and running through brick walls and hopefully lifting the championship title for us.
Yeah, I mean, my personal choice. It's funny. I'm going to go for McCormack, who I didn't care at all to be spending around 12 million on him when the first time he came up in the papers as a potential Villa purchase, I was like, no, that's a waste of money, too old, you know, blah blah blah. And why hasn't anybody ever come in for him, like on the top level? And you know, the other discussion is Scottish international could do with a few nifty forward players. Why is he not in the setup? But you know, after seeing him play, I'm thinking this guy, if he really catches fire, he could be the difference to get us right up there, and he could be the player that every other championship team wished they had. But at the same time, he has to impose himself. If he doesn't impose himself, I'm sure he'll chip in, but he won't be the difference that gets us there. I mean, that will be, you know, an Elfink or a Jedinak giving us something that we've been desperate for, which is a proper leader. Somebody who the, you know, fans can actually get behind because they see determination and fight, which supporters should have from the stands, you know, kind of personified in a player. And, you know, Jedinak, you know, I might have gone for him, but, you know, has he still got the legs and the fights? You know, we shall see. Elfink has it, but you know, he had a bit of a shaky year last year because of his injury. So has he recovered from that? So you know, I'm going to go for McCormack. As I said earlier, and if I didn't say earlier, then I was thinking it earlier. And that's the. It all looks good on paper. This leader's all in the right places. The championship experience, proven championship success, it all looks good on paper. It's just that can these guys rise one more time and not assume they're going to be getting promoted because, you know, oh, we've spent 50 million, we've got a team together, we're, you know, we're seriously going to get, you know, we're one of the favourites now, just nobody else spent any money, as we just said. Newcastle, you know, this, it's kind of a lazy assumption to think that Newcastle and Villa, because they have spent more than the rest of the league combined, will essentially buy promotion. It, don't think it really works that way in this league. And the problem is, it could go seriously if Villa don't get there. And we chastised Villa for the other reason in January of last season for not spending and not gambling and not trying and not taking a punt. And I found that, you know, that hurts more when you don't go for it than going for it. And, you know, if we don't make it and we spent 50 million, then at least we fucking tried.
I couldn't agree more.
Do you think this team will gel? Because there's a lot of players in, and some sceptics have said, well, maybe it'll take another season to, you know, get up there.
Maybe, but what we've got the advantage of, I suppose, is that we've got an international break now, and there's a hell of a lot of games to play. A hell of a lot of games to play. And this is correctable in January as well.
No, that's the situation is most teams already are kind of capable of beating each other. So nobody's 100%.
I think if we could just get a little bit of momentum so that we start to chip away and we start to keep ourselves in that top cluster of teams, I'd like to think, given the level of investment and you know, with a few more methodical additions, maybe in January, you know, a couple of clever loans or something. You know, and if we're in really good shape, that's when you perhaps can start cherry picking players from other championship clubs who aren't doing as well, or you can then start to approach Premier League players who, or players around Europe, who you can say, look, we're going to make this push, and you know, we're going to be back in the Premier League next season. Come to us for, you know, 6 months or with a view to a permanent signing.
Upshot is Dr. Tony and Keith Wynas have delivered in terms of financially, they've delivered in terms of getting the team that's De Matteo, Steve Clark, etc. wanted. And I think Dr. Tony actually said, at least we've got the, this is before deadline day, said at least we've got the basic eight players that De Matteo wanted. So is it now a case of over to you, De Matteo, you have the tools for the job, get on with it?
Yeah, he's much better resourced than he was a month ago.
Judging from what we've seen from the doc, how patient do you think he will be with De Matteo?
Time will tell on that one. I get the impression not very. I'm not quite sure what lends me to believe that, but he doesn't seem to suffer fools, does he? I think there was a tweet where Dr. Tony made the point, perhaps to a fan or somebody who'd contacted him, about the fact that, you know, De Matteo now has these signings and he can get on with the job, really. Ultimately, De Matteo will be judged against how he does. That these are players that apparently De Matteo's picked, and you know, the list was given to Wynas and to Tony to recruit. I have to say, I think our defence is strong enough. I think we've got a lot of firepower, and we've shored up the midfield. The only glaring issue I could see us possibly having is the African Cup of Nations could be a bit of a hiccup for us, if we, you know, because that's going to change our personnel and the goalkeeper. Maybe a bit of squad depth issue, but you know, he's what, a matter of weeks and months into actually owning the club. So in terms of players, there's not a fat lot more he can do.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. I think it's as well set up for the promotion, probably maybe a little bit better than I expected, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
And we're at the races now. We just obviously need to start getting the points on the board. But the interesting distinction is that there's a certain mentality, as I just said, fans will think it is over to you now, De Matteo, because you've got the tools. And if he fails, it would seem that the fans would be on, you know, obviously Tony's side to get rid of him. But at the end of the day, De Matteo is Tony's. That was his first big decision. And he went against the grain, all that kind of due diligence in terms of recruiting a new manager for Villa. And Nigel Pearson was the man that was had the attributes to knuckle down and drag us out of this league. And Tony's first big decision was to go against that and get in De Matteo. So, it's definitely going to get interesting.
That's for sure.
Okay, right, just to round this off, let's go for five reasons to be cheerful about the transfer window. Dan, you can go for the first stab.
An actual transfer window where we had interest as Aston Villa fans, and where it didn't end with Jemba Jemba being paraded as the glorious saviour of our football club. You know, we had signings galore.
And number two?
Jolyon Lescott being sent to the glue factory. I thought that was
a bit harsh. I mean, AEK Athens is a club with great tradition, and they don't normally do exterminations.
No, but they are using their German bailout money to purchase dubious former England internationals. Just don't tell Angela Merkel.
I'm going to go for the whole leader thing. You know, your Jedinak, your Elfinks, something that we haven't had. Somebody you can root for. A bit of pluck and fight of previous seasons. Absolutely. At least there'll be a bit of heart there, hopefully.
Number four?
I really enjoyed watching the Joe Bennett debacle play. I thought that was just a hilarious... I thought it showed all of the pitfalls of social media playing out before us. It was brilliant because not only did it infuriate Sheffield Wednesday fans when when Tony clearly decided, oh, I'm going to sell to anyone but you.
He did have a parting shot against them as well, didn't he, in that tweet?
He did. I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was not the most subtle.
In terms of his subtleness, because he had a little shot at Newcastle before. Has he had the go at the Blues? I mean, that's going to come.
I think he had a disagreement with Rangers as well, didn't he? He disagreed with Rangers' statement.
And then the Joe Bennett incident, where obviously Bennett was referring to him, and the way it kind of was resolved, he made out that Bennett was talking about something else. This is like an additional theme to this season, is as well as what's going on the pitch, and obviously that mission to get promoted is... how is this whole social media experience going to kind of implode, explode, or be furiously entertaining? What's the worst that can happen? Well, we're going to find out, I'm sure. The situation that I think grows the concern is if this is how he reacts in this situation, let's call it refreshingly unprofessional, how does he react in bigger, let's say more volcanic,
in a real crisis,
volcanic situation? It's got to the point over the last week that I've even forgot that Di Matteo was the manager.
He's literally like, he's won a competition to manage a football club, hasn't he? And he's wandering around now. He's got his players in, and a bit like
it is a little bit like that.
And I wonder whether it's kind of good for Di Matteo, because I suppose it keeps the spotlight off. It's kept the spotlight off Keith Wynas as well.
Yeah, completely. Because when you consider how Tom Fox was pushed forward, it wasn't really his fault, because he wasn't actually seeking the limelight. It was just because Randy Lerner was so absent that he was the only, turned out to be the dartboard, the punching bag, and everything in between.
But if there has been anything that, and this has become more apparent to me in the last few days, and it's something that I don't think I'd really thought about at any great length, Tony has massively raised the profile of Aston Villa over the last 5 or 6 weeks. Some of it for the wrong reasons, but it depends whether you prescribe to the theory that all publicity is good publicity. But he's so visible.
There's two train of thoughts. I mean, I haven't really analysed it or looked into it too much, but what other fans are perceiving and are relaying what I've seen at the corner of my eyes, and that's some fans who are saying, oh, I wish our chairman was like this, and I wish, all chairmen were like this, while other fans are going, this guy's a clown, which you're going to get anyway. I think let's move on to the fifth one, and I'm going to say we have a real shot of promotion now, which 2-3 weeks ago I was still thinking, next season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think we've gone from a position where, imagine that we hadn't added Jedinak, imagine that we hadn't added McCormack even, or Kojic. Where was the driver going to be? I think Adoma could be as crucial, actually, because what we've done is we've swapped out a raw and a player clearly didn't want to be at the club and hadn't actually shown a great deal for someone who's been there, done it, got the t-shirt.
You know who's going to play at least 30 games this season. And I think his record's pretty decent, actually, in terms of...
Almost an ever-present, yeah.
Which is the kind of people we're needing, because old Ross McCormack's going to spend a lot of time on the sidelines just being suspended with his yellow card a game ratio at the moment. That's one thing where you might is if we get to January and a lot of those guys have made the trip to the African Cup of Nations, and then suddenly, I don't know, like Ross McCormack gets injured and Elfink gets injured. In recent years, we've had long-term injuries as well. So you get one or two of those in the wrong position, and then suddenly you're missing your main guys in the African Nations. And
yeah, I mean, there are going to be some things that are completely out of our control, you know.
So, listeners, what did you think about the transfer window? Are you confident that this is the Villa army to take us back into the Premier League where we belong? Send us a tweet. The Twitter addresses will be in the links on the page of this, whether you're listening on iTunes or SoundCloud or whatever way form means. And also, and of course, on those formats, if you like the show and you want us to continue and get better and add more dimension, make sure you give us a thumbs up or a heart or a 5 stars or a review, and, you know, let us know. If you hate the show, give us 5 stars and then say how much you hate the show, because that way everybody wins and the world's in perfect equilibrium. So this show focused on the summer transfer window, and we'll be doing another show before Villa play Nottingham Forest, where we'll be previewing that game, as well as looking quickly back to what's happened so far in the season, and hopefully all the ills will be remedied by what we've seen in the transfer window. Until next time, I've been David Michael, and...
I've been Dan Rogers.
My old man said...
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.